Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Ghost Studies, a conversation with author Brandon Masullo. For centuries, scientists, skeptics, and believers alike have all been intrigued by questions like, what causes ghostly experiences? Are ghosts real? And why do certain people report numerous ghostly encounters while others experience none? Brandon Masullo's book, The Ghost Studies, provides a look into research and theories that shed light on these mysteries. This book is far more than a compilation of ghost stories. It includes the research on the role of energy and electricity in hauntings. It examines how emotions, bioenergetics, and the environment contribute to supernatural phenomena, and it delves into why some individuals are more prone to ghostly encounters. Whether you are a skeptic, a believer, or somewhere in between, his book promises to challenge your understanding of the paranormal. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the ghost studies, new perspectives on the origins of paranormal experiences, with author Brandon Masullo. After I read the book, The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences, as I told you when I first talked to you, I'm like, am I smart enough to talk to Brandon? I sure hope so. Because it was a really interesting read and you gave me a lot to think about. And you really go in to some very specifics on research and different things. And some of it, I'm going to be honest, kind of went over my head. So I hope I don't embarrass myself today.
No, I don't think you will. It's always interesting because none of us are experts when it comes to the paranormal, you know. PhDs in physics or chemistry or you're a physician or you're a parapsychologist, you know, none of us have all the answers. So we're all kind of in the same boat. Some of us kind of use more fancy words sometimes, but for the most part, we're kind of, when you talk to people, at least when I do, whether that's just randomly coming across someone with a ghost shirt that strikes up a conversation or at a conference, our thoughts are kind of similar. Mm-hmm. We're viewing things a little differently, but for the most part, we kind of have the same perspectives on things. We're just explaining it a little differently. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book is I heard so many of these ghost stories over the years, and I just started really writing them down and thinking about them and then more or less kind of just picking them apart. And then I came up with some patterns and commonalities and then hypotheses. And then that's kind of when the book came out. But when I go to conferences or talks, most people will come up and go, yeah, I kind of was thinking the same thing. So it's weird how that really works.
And you have a really interesting background, too, because you actually, well, I'll let you explain your background, but you're a clinical therapist, but mm-hmm. you're also a parapsychologist. And so you have several different degrees, including a degree, one from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. Mm-hmm. So a parapsychology degree.
Yeah. So
what came first?
Well, the graduate degree in clinical counseling came first. So I went to the University of Toledo here in Ohio, and I got my undergrad in psychology, and then I got my my master's in clinical counseling. And you know, at the time, I've always been interested in ghosts. So when I was studying psychology, I actually asked one of the the professors at the time or the teachers, I asked him about, hey, I'm thinking about getting into parapsychology. And he kind of laughed at me. And he basically said, that's a bad idea. One of the advisors was like, that's a bad idea. I don't think you want to do that. I think what you want to do, and again, this is my undergrad, was he said, I think you want to get a degree in something that more or less pays the bills.
Mm.
And once you do that, you feel you're comfortable, then I would go out and pursue parapsychology. So, you know, at the time when someone laughs at your dream, you kind of get angry. But the more I thought about it, he was actually kind of a little bit right. So I actually followed that path and I got my master's degree in clinical counseling. And then I was more or less a therapist for a couple of years. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to pursue parapsychology. So I applied to the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. There's not a lot of institutions that have the programs for parapsychology.
There are not.
Yeah, especially here in the States. It's not really something that universities have departments in. They kind of sometimes do. They'll take parapsychological topics and research and give it a different name. So you'll see sometimes universities with studies in consciousness or transpersonal psychology, just different names sometimes they give it. So anyway, I applied to the University of Edinburgh's parapsychology program and I got in. And then I got on a plane and went to Scotland and I was there for until I got the master's degree. The degree is actually in psychological research methods with a specialization in parapsychology. So basically you learn how to design experiments, research design, statistics, and then you kind of pick a specialty you want to get in, and that's when your dissertation's in it. And my specialty was parapsychology, and then I studied, and then my dissertation was on environmental sensitivity and paranormal experiences.
I think all of us who listen to this show, who have been on this show, myself included, we all have had some kind of experience that led to our interest in the paranormal. And I found yours really interesting. It was basically your kid and one of your friends asked you if you believed in ghosts. And that kind of started a conversation, which got you interested. And I find that so interesting because, you know, you think about all those paths in life that could have gone a different direction. And from one simple question, it kind of led you down a path.
Yeah, you're right. It is kind of odd how we become who we are, mm-hmm. right? Like everyone has their own origin stories for, you know, what jobs they have, who they marry, who they spend time with. But an odd series of things happened when I was younger that kind of pushed me towards this direction. And one of them was that that time, I think we were 15 years old at a sleepover, and the kid's house was supposedly haunted. And I remember that my friend had thought he saw an apparition of a woman in the basement. And, you know, once all the intensity of the emotions kind of calmed down, I think the question really was, you know, what are ghosts? You know, and then that really bothered me. That question kind of bothered me because there isn't an answer for it.
Exactly.
And I went to the library. I got a lot of books, a lot of parapsychology books, just trying to find answers. Because back then the internet was there, but it wasn't a wealth of resources as it is now. And there wasn't ghost hunting shows or groups or anything along those lines. So you really just had to find the answers yourself, more or less. And then that kind of just got me going and thinking. And the next thing you know, I'm studying psychology, and then I'm studying parapsychology, and then I'm writing a book about what are ghosts, what I think ghosts are, at least.
So with all that said, and what you've studied and researched, do you think that ghosts are real? Or that might be a very nuanced question now that I said that out loud. Because there's not a yes or no, really. There might be aspects to it. But how do you feel about it, the paranormal? And I think you refer to it in the book as ghostly experiences.
Yeah.
But you do believe in, I don't know if believe in that is the right way to say that, but you do believe that it happens.
Yeah, 100%. I do believe, and defining ghosts is sort of a challenging thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe, so a lot of the questions you get, and this could be with your friends or your family or whoever, but they always want to ask, do you believe in ghosts? For me, at least coming at it from sort of a research perspective or a trying to find the answers perspective, the first question I usually start with is, do people have ghostly experiences? And the answer to that is obviously yes. You know, millions of experiences are reported every year. So yes, people are having experiences which they deem to be anomalous or the result of ghosts or haunts or apparitions. So then you have to kind of go back a little bit and figure out, okay, well, what's going on? You know, and let's set aside fraud, attention-seeking behavior.
Mental illness.
Else. Whatever else you want to throw there. And then just kind of figure out what actually could be going on. And that's the fun part about being in, being a ghost enthusiast or just being interested in something like this is that it's really enchanting. And you just sit down and you think about it. And how often do we do that nowadays? Just sit down and think about, you know, what is a ghost or what is love or, right. You know, these types of huge questions that sometimes in our lives now we're in such a rush and we have our phones in front of us all day and even to the point where we go to sleep where we just don't sit and think. We're constantly distracted. So sitting down and coming and just developing a hypothesis on what you think it is and not just taking something from TV or taking something from a book or taking something from a TikTok and just repeating it, but coming up with your own sort of perspective on things. And I think that's a very human experience that is decreasing over the years. Not to say it doesn't happen, but I know just thinking about today, you know, I woke up, took the shower, you know, made breakfast, got in the car, listened to the radio, got to work, listened to people talk, did Excel sheets. You know what I'm saying? So my day is just constantly distracted. So,
I mean, heck, most of us wake up in the morning and grab our phone.
Yeah.
To see what we missed while we were asleep.
Yeah. So. And I get it. I need to be distracted sometimes. I mean, I have anxiety and depression and, you know, all these emotions and thoughts and stressors that it's nice to be distracted. I don't want to be alone with my thoughts a lot. So, but I think there is a lot of positive things can come from that. So that's really sort of the development of a lot of things. You know, do you believe in ghosts? What are ghosts? You know, why are certain people having numerous ghostly experiences and other people have actually none? Why is this house haunted and the house right next door to it not? Are ghosts, how come they can't cross property lines? That doesn't make sense to me, right? Why, you know what I'm saying? If this house is haunted, why can't the ghost just walk to the neighbor's house and that house be haunted too? Like, why are there these rules that have been in place since the 70s or even maybe 3,000 years ago that say if a ghost haunts a location, it has to be there. So, you know, to me, it's like you just sit there and try to figure out and come up with answers or at least hypotheses on what's going on.
You had one in the book that really resonated with me. So I wrote this down. Perhaps in every haunted location, there was an individual who sent a distress call to someone with whom they were emotionally linked that has been stuck at that location. Perhaps this is what sensitives and ghost hunters are encountering. I sat there after I read that and I really thought about that. And I'm like, that kind of makes some sense to me. You know, like, for example, when I was a kid in the house we lived in, I can't say now looking back, it was every night in my brain. It was every night, but I don't know. But it sounded like a man would walk out of the bathroom upstairs, heavy feet, very plodding, very deliberate steps, would walk along this banister, sometimes stop, and that would be it. Sometimes would go down the stairs, sometimes would go out the front door. Maybe that was a distress thing that just keeps replaying. So at some point, something happened and that got stuck at that location. And other things happened in that house too. That was the one thing that repeated over and over again. But that I thought was really an interesting way to look at it because, you know, there's lots of examples in the book too, about a woman whose son was in Vietnam and she experienced these weird, like a headache and things happening. And her son ended up being in a horrible fight or assault or whatever. Combat.
Yeah.
And she experienced that. Another one was a woman who experienced burning on her arm and her daughter had burned her arm. So there's things that are communicated somehow from one person to another. It could be communicated, I would think, from one time to another.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we think of, and that's examples of telepathy. So when we think of telepathy, sometimes we think of just reading people's minds. So you think of a number and then I read your minds, or mind. But telepathy is defined as the communication of impressions of any kind from one mind to another, independently of recognized channels of the senses. What's often not discussed is there's many cases of telepathy which are visual. They involve sounds, overwhelming feelings like fear, concern, sadness for no reason. You know, having a vision of a friend in trouble or in an accident, experiencing like a hunch that something bad is happening and later finding out it did. Perhaps seeing a vision of your mother and then later finding out she died at the same time you had the vision. This is sort of like telepathy. There's a category of ghosts or apparitions called crisis apparitions. And crisis apparitions are basically, you know, if I wake up on a random Tuesday night at 1 a.m., there's an apparition of my aunt floating above my bed. She says, "I love you. Goodbye." And somehow I manage to go back to sleep. And I wake up the next day and I get a call saying my aunt died at 1 a.m. last night. So as my aunt died, there was an apparition of her saying goodbye to me, right? So they call these things crisis apparitions. And basically what it is, it's like a entanglement or a connection between two people. One who's having a crisis, so more or less sending a message, like a distress message to someone they're kind of linked with. Now, a lot of times these messages come in different forms, hunches, feelings, sadness. Sometimes they're visual apparitions. But these crisis apparitions are a fascinating part of the ghostly lore. It's not really talked about on TV because it's not a haunting or it's not a demon or something like that. But crisis apparitions provide a significant amount of proof of whether it's telepathy or ghosts, however you want to view it, because you have a person who maybe never had a ghostly experience in their whole life. So if they're alive for 30 years, that's a lot of minutes. And to have the only time they have a ghostly experience is the exact time their aunt dies across town. The odds of that happening are astronomical.
Right.
So there's, and then you can get, you can verify when the aunt died. And you can, you know, you can verify certain things like this too. So crisis apparitions are great. And you mentioned a little bit about, you know, if I see a crisis apparition of my aunt in my bedroom, all right. And then let's say, I don't know, I end up selling the house and a new family moves in. I sell the house in 10 years or so and a new family comes in. And then the new family, you know, they're sleeping in, the new person who bought the house is sleeping in that room where I saw my aunt. And then wouldn't you know it, maybe they see an apparition of an older woman hovering above their bed.
And now, they would have no way of knowing. They would just be like, oh my God, it's a haunting.
Yeah. So is that the ghost that they're, or are they picking up on some of that sort of like that message that got sent to me years ago? And then you call in a psychic or a ghost hunting team and they look for people who died in the home or they do different types of things. Maybe they do an EVP and they pick up some words like, I love you, goodbye, which is what my aunt told me in the crisis apparition.
That really did happen to you?
No. Oh,
okay. I was like, wow.
I found one. Have you ever heard of Fate Magazine?
No.
No, Fate Magazine's been around for, oh gosh, I want to say maybe since the 40s. They do a lot of, they have issues where people write in ghost stories, but they talk about all things like esoteric and occult and paranormal and aliens and Bigfoot. It's a really cool magazine if no one's ever heard of it. But they have these old issues, and one of the issues had a haunted house. And during they wrote in and said, basically, these people rented a house. And then on May 28th or something like that, they heard phantom footsteps coming down the stairs and like a gurgling, choking noise and a loud noise. And then screams like, ma, oh, ma. And it happened every night all summer. So they thought the house was haunted. So they went down to the local grocery store and spoke to locals. And they said that, yeah, that happens to the house all the time. People always leave because they think it's haunted. But the actual origin stories of that haunting went back about 30 years. A mother lived in the house with her sons, and her son actually left Ohio to go to Chicago. And one night she was sitting in her chair in the house in Akron, and her son was in Chicago. He's a bricklayer, ended up falling off the scaffolding, breaking his neck and screaming like, ma, oh, ma, as he fell to the ground. And then the mom in Akron had that crisis apparition. She saw her kid, heard her kid running down the steps, heard the gurgling, choking noise and screaming, ma, oh, ma. So what happened now is you have the origins of this haunting, which is the mom experiencing a crisis apparition. Now, these people who rented the house 40 years after that event occurred are thinking it's a haunting, when in fact, it's actually just that telepathic distress signal that was sent 40 years previously that they're picking up on.
That's interesting to me. Gives me a little bit different way to think about some things.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people think if there's ghostly activity in my house, there has to be some sort of death or tragedy in the house, right? And that's not necessarily always the case, right? I could live in a house that I just built a house, moved into it. And a week after I moved into it, I get the crisis apparition of my aunt floating above me. And then I'm like, well, I don't want to live in this house. Or maybe something happens and I move out a year later. So the house has been built. It's only been there for a year. New people move in and they're seeing ghosts, right? So I think that when we look at ghosts, it's such a complex, to find one explanation for what a ghost is, I think is impossible. It's probably in numerous things, a series of different things.
Mm.
One ghost could be a discarnate spirit. Another one could be the results of like psi or telepathy. Another ghostly experience could be maybe some sort of, time loop or residual thing. Or, it could be, misinterpretation of high EMFs in the area that they think is ghosts.
And that's one thing that you go into the book quite extensively about EMFs. And I think that's interesting too, that you could think, or you could be actually feeling like there is a haunting going on. You could be sleeping right next to the fuses. There's some things, some environmental factors in your own home that could be causing things that present as paranormal activity.
Yeah, I'm sure you've watched the ghost hunting shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all have. They're pretty entertaining. I love watching them. I'll say that to anybody who asks. But they use a lot of EMF meters. The EMF meters, the origins of those, as relates to ghosts, had to do back in the 80s with Michael Persinger, who was a neurologist out of Canada. And what he found was that if you exposed people to what they call complex electromagnetic fields, and complex just means like a lot of variance in them. So up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. what happens is they have a sense presence, like someone's in the room, and they actually sometimes have visual and auditory hallucinations, similar to ghosts. So the thing is it's a natural way to explain it. So I'll backtrack a little bit. We're all surrounded by EMFs, electromagnetic fields. They're all around us. Anytime there's electricity in a house, anytime you flip a switch on, there's electromagnetic fields. The computer I'm sitting in front of now is giving off EMFs. The lamp next to me is. Your fuse box, your washer, your dryer, these are all giving off EMFs. They're very low level EMFs. So usually you don't encounter anything more than, I don't know, 5 or 6 milligauss. Unless you're standing next to a fuse box, then you might get like 100 and some milligauss. But the idea was that it doesn't have to be a high amount of EMFs or like thousands of milligauss that cause people to have these feelings that similar to having seen a ghost. It could be something as low as like 40 milligauss, as long as it's complex or variable, then people could actually start having, because of the electromagnetic fields, it tricks their brain into maybe having a sense presence, feeling like you're not alone, maybe tingling, maybe actually visually seeing something. And they went into people's houses, and one person was reporting all these ghosts by his bed, and they took EMF readings and found that there was a clock next to his bed that was giving off high amounts of EMFs that was very complex and variable. Once they removed the clock, the ghosts went away. There's other examples that I go over in the book too. So this is the environment manipulating our brains to see ghosts. So when you see people walking around with EMF meters, the notion on TV is that EMFs that go up and down means there's a ghost in the area. When in fact, research in the past has said when you have variable EMFs, that means that there's things in the environment that could be sort of tricking or manipulating your brain. Now, this isn't the case for everything, right? So they've done research and they've shown high EMFs, variable EMFs, and people aren't having ghostly experiences at all. So the research is inconsistent on this. So it doesn't mean that every time there's an EMF that's complex or variable in the environment, you're going to see a ghost. There's so many factors that go into it, but it's something to think of. So if you're part of a ghost hunting team and you have an EMF meter and you notice erratic readings, there could be something wrong with the wiring. And it's maybe something to look at. It's not a ghost. You have bad wiring, which means your electric bill could be really high, or no one puts their bed next to a fuse box because it's probably not the best place to sleep at night, so these are all things to just keep in mind.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about was, years ago when my dad was still alive, he had lost his girlfriend. They'd been together for a long time, and my dad had been a mortician and a funeral director. And he got we had this very in-depth conversation one night about energy. And he's like, you can't kill energy. So where did she go? There's still got to be part of her energy around here. And so the more, over the years, and when I talk about the paranormal and like when I was reading your book, there's so much talk about energy. There could be some sort of leftover energy from somebody left behind in a location, or do you think that has anything to do with a haunting? Because you really can't kill it. But yeah, what do you think?
Well, I'm not like a physicist or an electrical engineer or anything along those lines. So what happens to energy after we die, or what happens to our soul or our consciousness? We're as humans, we're electrical beings, right? There's neurons firing, synapses, impulses from your heart. If you do an EEG of your brain or an EKG, they're measuring electrical signals more or less. So we're electrical beings. As far as what happens to energy when we die, I'm not sure. I pulled some research in the book I talk about, and Michael Persinger again, was the neurologist out of Canada who did a lot of work with sort of ghosts and EMFs and things like that. And he has a YouTube video called No More Secrets. And in it, he talks about how, you know, the Earth's atmosphere has the capacity to hold so much energy. And he talked about this idea of the collective conscious. I think sometimes it's referred to as the Akashic Records. This idea that all of the energy or all of our thoughts and memories are somehow stored in the environment. So, you know, then it gets kind of into that new agey stuff. But, you know, this is a neurologist talking about what could be happening in the environment. And then he talks about entanglement and telepathy. So in the book, I kind of refer to a lot of his thoughts and research into it, because I'm not really knowledgeable enough to give, I would say, my thoughts on like what happens after we die as far as our soul and our energy.
Because I did write down, and this might be from him, about our all living things connected. Minds are entangled or connected with the minds of others and can synchronize at great distances with the help of our Earth's atmospheric properties. That got me thinking. I'm like, that's an interesting thing. That's deep. It's very deep. But it does explain those weird things that can happen telepathically. You know, like, why did I know the day before my grandma died if I didn't leave right at that moment, get in my car and drive the 85 miles to see her, I would never see her again. And I got in my car and I drove there and I saw her and I never saw her again. But I had this overwhelming sense, like, if I want to see her alive, I have to go right this minute. And I'm so glad I did. But how did I know? You know, it's like, so somewhere out in there, I don't know how it works, but my mind connected with my grandma's. I don't know.
You mentioned entanglement there for a little bit.
And entanglement that is a good word for that.
Yeah. I mean, that's Persinger's stuff, but entanglement, and sometimes it's referred to as non-locality. It basically describes the ability of objects to instantaneously know about each other's state, even when they're separated by extreme distances. So the idea is that entanglement is when two things kind of synchronize. When they synchronize, information is sort of transported or shared between the two. And the type of information passed or communicated may come in the form of visual images, feelings, as you talked about, hunches, visions, or voices to some degree. And in the book, I talk about how, and this is based some on Persinger's research, is that our minds are entangled or connected with the minds of others, both alive and deceased, and more or less can synchronize at great distances through the help of the Earth's atmospheric properties. You know, Persinger basically said, in theory, we have access to information from every brain, past and present. And the environment kind of helps us communicate from one to another. Now, this is stuff that goes against everything that kind of we were taught, right? We're all, the only way, like, inside ourselves, it ends at our flesh, right? I shouldn't be able to communicate with someone via my mind who's not inside my own mind, right? But right. Persinger and his colleagues, they kind of had a rough idea of a magnetic field pattern that could be used to sort of increase the likelihood of entanglement or communication at a distance. And he did several experiments in which normal subjects, not psychics or anything, were separated, in other words, like placed in different rooms, and then exposed to the same specific configuration of rotating magnetic fields around their heads. So you have a person in room A and a person in room B. You put these little motorcycle helmets on their head and you shoot them with a very specific amount of EMFs into their brain, more or less, okay? A certain specific configuration kind of synchronized two people, and then information was sort of exchanged. So in other words, example of this is he put one person A in a room that was completely dark, right? And he put person B in a room and they had the the magnetic field's kind of going around their brain. And then he flashed light into one person's eye, and then the person in the room that was completely black started seeing like flashlights in their eyes. So that shouldn't be possible if he's in a black room. So somehow what's happening to person A is being communicated to person B. And they did this, they separated people by like thousands of miles, and they were able to achieve entanglement. They found when they did research on people with psychic abilities that when the psychic and the subject's EEG or brain waves resonated or became similar, this is when the most accurate readings occur. So what you're having is people's brains are sort of synchronizing, and then information is being passed. Now, he's able to, according to him, manipulate it through magnetic fields around their heads, but maybe this stuff is happening without the manipulation of science, kind of like in your situation where telepathy is just kind of occurring naturally. I don't know how or why it happens in the real world, but he's showing that that can happen in these certain experimental situations.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Brandon Masullo about his book, The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences. You can buy the book on Amazon or wherever books are sold. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes without the commercials, you could become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. Or go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.